This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. As the fires burn on, 900,000 people in Southern California have been told to evacuate their homes. Strong and shifting winds can drive the wildfires at surprising speed and in unexpected directions, and residents often just have a few minutes to flee. So far, 5 people are known dead, and 45 others are reported hurt, including 18 firefighters, and the various fires have consumed more than 1,800 homes and businesses and burned more than 600 square miles. Today, we focus on leaving your house in the face of natural disaster. Of course, you gather your family, your pets, important documents, and medicines, but if you have just a couple of minutes, what else do you decide to save? We want to hear from those of you who have had to make these decisions, whether it was a wildfire, a flood, a hurricane, or a tornado. What did you take with you, and how did you decide what was most important? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can tell your story on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later on in the program, one of TV's top writer-producers on Law and Order and the possibility of a writer's strike. But first, leaving your home behind, we begin with Danielle Duncan. She's an evacuee who fled her home in Rancho San Diego and who has spent the last couple of nights in San Diego's Qualcomm Stadium, where she joins us now on her cell phone. Danielle, nice to have you on the program today.
Hi, thank you.
And as I understand it, you left your home voluntarily.
Yes, I did.
Why?
Well, we actually went outside of our door, and we can just see a thick layer of smoke and redness up on the hill. It was like behind the 94 highway, and it was a mountaintop up there. When we saw that, we called the emergency hotline 211, and they said, okay, it doesn't sound good. You guys should evacuate. So it was a voluntary evacuation. We went up the street. We got our neighbors. We told all of our neighbors in our complex, and we let them know to leave. They're like, oh, we're just going to wait it out.
Mm-hmm.
But as we were actually leaving to come to Qualcomm Stadium, we could actually see the flames on the hill off the 94 highway.
And do you know at this point whether your house is okay?
Yes. Our neighbors that we came to Qualcomm with, they went ahead and they went back to their house this morning. They said that everything's still standing. The air quality is terrible, though. However, all the buildings, the complexes, everything around in our area is still standing.
Now, you apparently had a little bit more time than most.
Yes.
How did you decide what to, you know, you can only take as much, I guess, as can fit in your car?
Well, I think I'm a very reasonable person. I stopped and I said, what really matters and what can't be replaced? So that's when I gathered up all my pictures from family photos, my daughter, just anything that I know I can't replace. Clothes and shoes, things like that I left behind. I can go shopping again. But the main thing that I knew I couldn't replace and that I would just be heartbroken if I didn't have these things was things of sentimental value. My photo albums, my DVDs of, like, my daughter, you know, her first birthday just passed. So those are the things that I grabbed first, and that's really all that mattered to me.
Is there something that you're sitting there at Qualcomm Stadium now saying, oh, you know, if
no.
It, no?
No.
No regrets?
I honestly, you know, and I thought I would go through that. I thought I would actually sit back and be like, oh, man, I forgot this. But you know what? I can't think of a single, because, you know, luckily I was just getting ready to put together a scrapbook. And so I had all my recent pictures that I had taken still within the packages recently developed.
Mm.
So I had everything still in the packages. So it was very easy to grab it up and just go.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't think of anything, any pictures or DVD diskettes or anything like that that I left behind that I'm kicking myself for now.
Uh-huh. What is it like there at Qualcomm Stadium?
Oh, there are thousands of people out here, both those who are evacuated and just those who are coming out here to help. So many different places have just come down here, the Salvation Army, just tons of places that pulled together, donating food, clothing, blankets, you name it, they have it here.
Mm-hmm.
We prepared to go because we did have more time. We also brought blankets and water and things, and we haven't really needed to use any of those things because all of that is here.
Mm-hmm. There, you know, obviously going to a football stadium in the face of disaster, was there a moment where you're saying, uh-oh, is this going to be the Superdome?
No. No, I mean, it actually does. It looks like that out here. It really is. It's hectic. Lots of people. But you know what? The one good thing about it is everyone out here is so optimistic given the situation. I am so amazed at the positive attitudes. I mean, you see no one out here moping. Or I met a gentleman earlier who lost his home in Poway, and he was out here with his two twin daughters. And he is one of the most optimistic people around this place. So, yeah, it's amazing the responses you're getting, and everyone is just so helpful. It's incredible.
Well, Danielle, we wish you continued good luck with your house, and thanks very much. We'll let you spare your cell phone battery.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Danielle Duncan evacuated her home in Rancho San Diego, joined us on her cell phone with that dwindling battery from Qualcomm Stadium. Let's get a caller on the line. We want to hear from those of you today who have had to make the decision that Danielle did. If you had to flee your house, what do you take with you at the last minute? Joining us is Christina, and she's with us from Jacksonville, Florida.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks. What's your story?
Well, we fled from Hurricane Floyd in 1999. I had a four-year-old daughter and a two-week-old son, and we turned on the news and saw that the hurricane was coming, and it was larger than the state.
Huh.
So we were part of the evacuation. I think a million people fled Florida at that point along the East Coast. The things we brought were pictures, important documents, and our Christmas ornaments.
And your Christmas ornaments?
Well, we brought our Christmas ornaments, and I still have them living in Florida along the Atlantic Ocean. We always know that a hurricane could come at any time, but fortunately with satellites, we know when they're coming.
Yeah.
So those are the things you really can't replace.
And those are sentimental value, family heirlooms, that sort of thing. Were there other things you left behind that you worried about?
Well, definitely. We actually have a lot of trees all around our house. So, we thought the trees are going to come down through our roof. And just anything. I mean, your whole house, your life is in your home for the most part. And you leave it, but it all boils down to what's most important. You know, if you have your pets, you have your kids, you have your family with you, you can replace anything else.
Was it a moment of panic and uncertainty, or was it a moment of clarity where you understood what was most important?
Well, it was definitely clarity. I saw that it was coming. I realized that we needed to leave, and we left the night before. The big lesson that was learned out of Floyd is I-10 comes through into Jacksonville. We left the night before because I knew that there would be gridlock, but what really ended up happening is cars were bumper to bumper along I-10 the next day and actually couldn't move. And if it had hit, all those people would have been in terrible danger. I-10 coming into Jacksonville was empty, but they weren't allowed to drive on it.
Yeah, they did get that right later in other crises where they just reverse the flow and let people use all the highways out of town.
Exactly.
I wonder, but it sounds like your house came through okay.
Oh, we were fine. Actually, Floyd did very, very little damage. It tore out the pier in St. Augustine, which is about a half an hour south. It did some damage to the beach, but for the most part, we were unscathed. But we really feel for the people in California. It's so easy to feel remote and distant, like that's another area. But if you've had to evacuate, it's frightening. It really is frightening, and our prayers are going out for the people that are experiencing it now.
Christina, thanks very much for the call.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Joining us now is Mark Willis. He is the deputy chief of the Newton Fire Emergency Medical Services Department. It's his job to be among the first on the scene of natural disasters. He's been involved in four major tornado responses in Kansas, including the huge EF5 that hit Greensburg in May. He joins us now from the studios of KNSS in Wichita, Kansas. Nice to have you with us today.
Thanks, Neil. Good to be here.
And I wonder, when you get to the scene of a natural disaster like a tornado, which I guess is your experience, who do you work with? What do you see?
Well, it's a coordinated effort amongst many emergency responders, fire, EMS, law enforcement, emergency management, and of course the volunteer agencies, Salvation Army, American Red Cross. So it's very much a coordinated effort.
What's the feeling among the victims? What's their reaction to what's happened if they see their house or their neighborhood flattened?
Well, it's a sense of devastation and loss, but as the two ladies that spoke previously alluded, it's not things. They want security. They want to account for family members, for friends, for neighbors, And that's what's important to people, regardless of their geographic location.
And regardless of what form the disaster takes, because often you don't even have a couple of minutes warning if it's a tornado.
Exactly. I mean, there's been so many advances in weather forecasting. And for example, in the state of Kansas, and even most notably with the Greensburg tornado, those folks had as much as 20 to 25 minutes warning of that advancing tornado, which was 1.5 miles wide. They wouldn't have had those kind of warnings even 10 years ago. And so that's given people a little afforded extra few minutes of time, but they still come across very quickly.
Nevertheless, afterwards, people, of course, have to rush to shelter at that point, and most people in Kansas have shelters in their houses. But if they're forced to evacuate afterwards because structures are weakened, do you find people are generally happy to do that? Are they willing to do that, or are they reluctant?
I think that folks are generally very willing to do what is asked of them, provided that we, as the emergency responders, are meeting their basic needs. And that includes, you know, food, water, shelter, assurances that we're going to get them assistance. And my experience has been that if they can help establish accountability for missing family members, neighbors, that's going to keep them content. And I have never personally experienced or observed a lot of problems with people refusing to evacuate or reluctant to leave their home.
Eventually, the whole city of Greensburg had to be evacuated.
Yes. As a matter of fact, the night of the Greensburg tornado, once we began search and rescue efforts and established the triage and treatment area for the affected victims, law enforcement effected a mandatory evacuation, which continued. The entire city was evacuated for the first 48 hours. And then there was a dawn-to-dusk curfew for the subsequent 5 days.
Okay. Stay with us, if you would.
Thank you, sir.
We're talking with Mark Willis, the Deputy Chief of the Newton Fire Emergency Medical Services Department, and we want to hear from those of you who have had to face the decision of evacuating your home at short notice. What were the thoughts that went through your mind? What were the decisions you had to make? How did you establish your priorities? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A little bit later in the program, the executive producer of Law and Order joins us to talk about the program and about the possible writer's strike that may hit Hollywood. Right now, though, we're talking about what it's like to have to flee your home. Several hundred thousand people are doing that right now in California as wildfires continue to burn. Of course, it's not the first natural disaster to force people from their homes. We want to hear from those of you who've been through this, whether it was a wildfire, a flood, a hurricane, or a tornado. What did you take with us, and how did you decide what was most important? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Still with us is Mark Willis of the Fire and Emergency Medical Services Department in Newton in Kansas, who's had experience with tornadoes. Let's see if we can get a caller on the line. And this is Shane. Shane's with us from St. Augustine in Florida.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing today?
Very well. Thank you.
Great. Well, we lived in the Keys for 12 years, and we evacuated several times for storms. And we had our house one time for Hurricane George where we just packed everything up and left and went down to a friend's house who was very strong house and back 3 trees on the house, very little water damage. But, you know, we had time to pack to get out. But the thing I was trying to say is, people forget that it's not just the initial getting out. It's when you get back to rebuild, you know, and then the aftermath of no power, no air conditioning, all the creature comforts that you're used to, you won't have them for a while until you get your life all back together.
And it must be a crushing moment. I don't mean that as a pun in any way, but to go back and see your house destroyed like that.
It is, but what you do is you collect yourself and you're thankful that you survived, and all those can be replaced.
And did you get around to replacing them all?
Probably. What you don't forget about, I suppose, but you do rebuild your life, and you do go forward, and you hopefully become stronger through it.
Shane, thanks very much, and we're happy you made it through.
Thank you very much, guys. You have a great day.
Bye-bye. Mark Willis, we mentioned earlier that after that huge tornado in Greensburg, the whole town had to evacuate. How soon afterwards were they allowed back in, and what was that like?
Well, the tornado occurred on a Friday night, and the entire community was evacuated over the course of that first night into the next morning as we continued with search and rescue efforts. The immediate residents were allowed back into the community on the following Monday morning, so just about a 72-hour evacuation period. And then law enforcement had a very controlled reentry plan that prevented non-residents from entering the community.
So they had to show proof that they were from there for fear, of looting?
Well, I guess that would be one of the concerns. That wasn't a real major problem out there, but probably the greater concern was safety towards emergency responders and those residents, because there's a tremendous amount of heavy equipment and emergency vehicle apparatus traffic throughout the community for the coming weeks.
And people were allowed to go back into their homes and retrieve belongings at that point?
Yes, they were. And the law enforcement officers had a very tight rein on who was coming in, where they were, to the point that the residents' home addresses were written on their windshields with a grease pencil, and they were to be nowhere else but their home address.
Mm-hmm. And what did you see people taking out that may have interested you or surprised you?
Well, this tornado struck at just after 10 p.m. on this Friday night, and there were those that were prepared and had their ready bag that had the essentials, some change of clothing, shoes, extra food, water, their pets, medicines. But some of the folks, you know, when it hit that time of night, literally had nothing but pajamas, a lot of folks without shoes or clothing.
Yeah, preparation critical in all of those situations, and clear thinking, I guess, in a crisis.
Yes.
Yeah. Mark Willis, thanks very much for being with us. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Neil.
Mark Willis, Deputy Chief of the Newton Fire Emergency Medical Services. He's been involved in four major tornado responses in Kansas, including the Greensburg tornado this past May that we've been talking about. He was with us from KNSS in Wichita, Kansas. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Robert. Robert with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I used to live in St. Louis, Missouri. Back in 1990, I'm sure you remember, we had all the big floods and whatnot because the levee broke.
We're having a hard time with your cell phone, Robert. You're breaking up. You're talking about the floods in St. Louis a few years back?
Yeah, in 93.
Yeah.
And I was part of some evacuations. They thought our levee was going to go, and they evacuated us to the Fox High School auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the right high school. And my dad, he said I could take one thing, and it was just kind of funny, so I took my big bucket of Legos. I was only 10 at the time, and, you know, that was pretty much the whole journey of the levee didn't end up breaking, and we got back to our house, and everything was still there, but it's like, you know, I had to move, and it was pretty weird just, you know, have to sleep in an auditorium with all your family and all these other people.
But at least you had your Legos.
Hmm? Yeah, at least I have my Legos, exactly.
All right. I'm glad everything worked out, Robert.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Joining us now is Tricia Wachtendorf. She's an assistant professor of sociology at the University of Delaware and on the faculty at the university's Disaster Research Center. She's with us from her office in Newark, Delaware. Nice to have you on the program today.
Good afternoon.
And I wonder, we've been hearing little incidents of problems that people have and decisions that they make. Are those typical of the problems and decisions that people have to make in the face of disasters?
Absolutely. And a lot of it comes down to how much time people have when when they're told that they have to evacuate or when they come to that decision themselves and when they actually leave their home. Certainly, as your guest mentioned, to have a ready bag, a go bag, where you have this material collected ahead of time, your identification, your medication, your mortgage papers, your insurance, that sort of thing, that makes that process all the much easier. When we're scrambling, though, and have to put things together in a very short time period, it's really what we have at hand, what's in our eye viewpoint, that we can gather together and go. So time is a critical factor there.
It's interesting. Also, one of the factors that we're hearing about in the fires in California is that in some neighborhoods, one house will be burned and another not. Is the psychology different if it's just your house maybe in a neighborhood that gets it, maybe in a tornado?
I think that there's a question of why me. In the case of the wildfires, one of the things that I've been hearing about is that sometimes there's these very difficult decisions that are being made by responders on which buildings to save or which neighborhoods to save. We did some research looking at the 1997 Red River flood in Canada, and there was a community outside the city of Winnipeg that was sacrificed for what was called the greater good. For the most part, those residents understood that decision, but were very upset when they faced obstacles in getting assistance or when the mayor announced that everybody's recovered, but they weren't. They really felt betrayed. So that's one of the things, if some of these decisions are made for very good cause, residents may start to question, how quickly they're getting assistance in light of those decisions.
So if a whole community like Greensburg goes out, there's, well, we're all in it together.
Sure. And there's the sense of looking to one's neighbors and understanding that you're not in it alone, that other people may have suffered worse than you have, and that actually helps the coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm. But if you feel somehow picked out, either that the firefighters or nature itself picks your particular house, that can be difficult.
Absolutely, and especially when you're dealing with all the other stressors associated with a post-disaster situation, applying for assistance, dealing with insurance companies, just trying to figure out what's going to happen next for you.
Yeah, I was interested in talking with Danielle Duncan, as we did earlier at Qualcomm Stadium. All those people she was saying are optimistic may not feel that way after filling out a lot of paperwork.
There's a lot of evidence that there is a great deal of community resilience after a disaster. Nearby communities don't seem to be as heavily impacted. I mean, there's a huge number of people who are at threat, but there's a big community support to fall back on. You hear of a lot of community-based organizations, residents coming, helping out at the shelters. That local community support is very important in that pro-social environment and helps people get through.
Mm-hmm. Then the question of going back, to see your house, even if it's, I guess, just ashes.
Right. And one of the things that we found after the World Trade Center disaster, an emergency manager described it to us as touching the dust. People really want to be able to see for themselves what happened, to be able to grasp it, and to go there themselves. It helps answer a lot of questions that they may have. And as some of your callers have mentioned, there may be an opportunity to collect some things that have been left behind, a picture that somehow survived of your daughter, a grandfather's wedding ring, things that are very much tied to our sense of identity and who we are that are much more important than a desk chair or a couch or a large screen TV.
I wonder, Newark, Delaware, not that far from the coast, the Atlantic coast, do you have a go bag ready to go?
I actually do.
Congratulations. Thanks very much for being with us, Tricia Wachtendorf.
Thanks very much.
Tricia Wachtendorf, an assistant professor of sociology at the University of Delaware, on the staff at the university's Disaster Research Center, with us on the line from her office in Newark, Delaware. Here's an email we got from MJ in Palo Alto. We lost our home in Hurricane Katrina and now live in the Bay Area. We appreciate that we were able to avoid traffic and prepare a little bit with the advance warning of the hurricane, although much less for Katrina than for others. I grabbed my most recent photos and documents. I thought I'd secured the rest of the photographs and mementos, but was not prepared for the high shelves to dissolve in weeks of water. The image of stacks of blank photo paper still haunts me. I wish I'd made room for those, but was glad to have a videotape walkthrough of the house and its contents for insurance. Let's see if we get another caller on the line. And this is Barbara. Barbara with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Barbara.
I'm thrilled that I'm on the air. Well, my name is Barbara McQueen, and I am Katrina evacuee.
Uh-huh. And you had obviously some warning. What did you decide to take with you?
Actually, you would think I would have some warning, but it lived in my area for 20 years and had made numerous evacuations, and so everyone knew what the drill was. So I had contacted all of my friends, many of whom were in New Orleans, and the people I had made friends with, my friends along the coast, but nobody was really leaving. I mean, that's what's so incredulous.
Hmm. What happened to your house?
We were all going to stay put, but yes, I'm responding because I was really taken aback by your first caller who said, that she had fled from California, and she had no regrets about anything that she left behind. And I can tell you that I constantly think about the things that were left behind in my house that were, you know, they're gone. I guess it's the bottom of the Bay of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. What, for instance, give us an example.
Well, I'm 62 years old, and my house was filled with things that, you know, from the past that either I had made or that friends had given me. I mean, I knew where every picture in my house came from. They just were not decorations on the wall. Odd things like recipe booklets, recipes, and...
You know what you're saying? It seems to be all these little things that add up to being your life.
Yeah, that was actually going to be my question. It wasn't so much that your home was destroyed and that, you know, my home was just a slab of concrete, so you'll never be going back to your home. But it's your life that's taken away.
Hmm.
I mean, you know, you don't have your job. You don't have your friends. You don't have your neighborhood. I'm obviously in a place where I knew actually no one. I knew one person in the Mecklenburg County, and that was somebody who had come here from New Orleans. She had lost her job because the school was destroyed.
Right.
And here I am. You know, it's a very surreal situation.
Well, Barbara...
I constantly think about that, and it's not so much the possessions, it's just your life as a whole.
Barbara, we wish you the best of luck. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
We're talking about people who've had to abandon their homes, and what's that like in the face of a natural disaster? You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to Meredith. Meredith with us from Nashville in Tennessee.
Yes, hi.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Well, we evacuated after Hurricane Andrew in Miami, Florida, and we actually lost our house. But we left our pets there because we were told that we would have to go to a shelter and we couldn't bring them.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so we left them, and we ended up actually going to a friend's house. But the pets ended up being okay, being left behind, and we went back immediately and got them. But we also, they told us to prepare for a flood, so we took everything off the floors and out of the closet floors and put them on top of beds and stuff, and ended up having tremendous wind damage and tornadoes. And so we lost everything that we had tried to save.
Did you manage, I'm glad the pets are okay, though, but did you manage to take something away that has come to mean something important to you?
You know, we didn't take any of our personal mementos. We didn't lose all of our pictures. Luckily, one of our cabinets where the pictures were got sealed shut by the water and the wind. So those were saved. But we lost a lot of personal things because we chose to leave too late, really.
Hmm. I guess those are the decisions you really regret. If you'd gotten out more quickly, you could have saved some things.
Yes, but in living in Miami, there was a hurricane every, you know, couple months coming our way. So we had sort of gotten so used to it that when this one came, we didn't take it as seriously as we should have. And when we realized how bad it, because it ended up being Category 5, by the time we realized that, it was a little too late to really grab anything. We kind of grabbed a couple of things of clothing and took off. So.
Well, I'm glad you're resettled down in Nashville.
We actually resettled into Fort Lauderdale, and then my parents ended up in Pennsylvania, and I ended up in Boston. So, so we had long roads, but
scattered to the winds, I guess, is not inappropriate. Thanks very much for the call, Meredith. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Here's an email we have from Greg. When I was a kid, I always feared my house was going up in flames and me being seen out in front of my burning house in jammies or underwear. So I always wore a pair of gym shorts to bed. It's a little complex that I carry with me to this day. Let's see if we can get one more caller in on the conversation. This is Reed. Reed with us from Weaverville in California.
Hi.
Hi. We just have a few seconds. What happened to you?
Well, we had a fire up in Northern California here.
Yeah?
And one of the things that we wanted to make sure to get out of the house was all our guns and ammunition.
Well, that's a good decision.
Yeah, because we didn't want any fire personnel or rescue people around if they started burning.
Yeah, and then cooking off the ammunition, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And did everything work out okay?
Yeah. Our our house was fine, thankfully, by a few feet.
But again, you go back to that moment of decision, and whether it's a moment of confusion or a moment of clarity.
Oh, it was pretty clear. We had a few hours of warning.
No. Reed, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you who called to share your stories. Stay tuned for more coverage of the fires in Southern California later today on All Things Considered and throughout the day on NPR News. Coming up on Talk of the Nation, Law and Order, Talk of the Nation Unit, executive producer Renee Bolse joins us to talk about that show and what a writer's strike might mean for Hollywood. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.